Hi, everybody. My name is Mark L., compulsive gambler. Grateful to be here. Still have a desire to stop gambling. This meeting, I always say, saved my life. It's been, just to give you an idea, it's been over 43 years since I made my last bet. I've been coming to meetings forever until COVID. And thank God this meeting started shortly after COVID started with Frank. This is probably one of the first meetings, I'm guessing, on. And I was on almost every day that first year. And now I don't hardly recognize anybody here. So it'll be good because I think I spoke about the steps 4 years ago. So it'll all be new. So again, my name is Mark L. And just to give a sort of start, and I always believe, I can only talk about myself and from myself. I try and do the best to always keep myself in the eye. If I say you, it's probably a female sheep, EWU. I try and avoid that. I've learned attraction rather than promotion. And, that said, the only time I'll sort of take everybody's inventory right now is my whole quest in GA is it's a miracle I'm not gambling. I'm guessing it's a miracle most of you are not gambling right at this minute. And I've spent my life on GA naming that miracle, but not in the beginning. So let's start off a little at the beginning for myself. I gambled on everything from a very young age. From 5 years old, I'm gambling with my cousins for pennies. I'm Jewish. I always say the first time I spun a dreidel, I was addicted. And I believe there for me it was a genetic thing. My grandfather, who had passed away before I was born, was a compulsive gambler and never knew him. And yet, like I say, the minute I spun that thing, I was in. I grew up in a really dense neighborhood in Brooklyn in Coney Island, and sports were really big. I sucked in sports. I was bullied. I was a small kid. And when I was about 12 years old, I found out the kids in my neighborhood had a Friday night poker game at somebody's house when their parents went away. And I was very, in those days, I was very smart, very good at math. Although my dad never gambled compulsively, he was a great card player, taught me how to play cards, and had a great sense of, reading people, and I won, and I thought they'd beat me up and take the money, but it was the first time I had respect for myself. So, I mean, that's the sort of the way, between nature and nurture, between my genetics and making me feel better, I was it. Created a lot of problems. I was really good in the early mid 70s in computers. But I screwed everything up. I gambled on everything. Racetrack, I had bookies, and illegal card games in New York, all these underground card games. We're talking about mostly the mid to the late 70s, and developed really quite a problem. Like everything that could have happened to me in terms of cards being repossessed, evictions, electricity turned off, everything else. But, I never really thought I had a problem until I think it was about when I was younger. I had read an article, Dear Abby, every year in those days. And I'm an avid newspaper reader, even as a kid, printed the 20 questions. So I knew I belonged in GA, but I never, even thought about going, And I think that's something I've learned about myself. With all the problems I've created, there were only two times where I was at where I thought I needed to really seek help. And that's the crazy part about this disease that makes this disease for me different than any other disease. I thought that I could win and fix everything, which was such bull crap. Because even if I won, the two time, if I won, I didn't leave. If I won and left, I'd go home and say, wow, it's great. I don't think I'll ever gamble again, and 2 days I'm out of trouble. 2 days later, I was in the worst trouble. So eventually, After being thrown out of engineering college, I was going to graduate to be the first computer engineer in the country, to being thrown out after the first year, a string of attending colleges that I never really went to classes. I still, one of the few regrets in my life is I actually bought the books. Why I bought those books, I could have gambled with that money. I never went to the classes. But eventually, after being fired from a great job in Wall Street, I was 24 years old. I was an operations supervisor at a big data center. And it's so hard to imagine. It was the size of a big building, the computers. My cell phone is now more powerful than that. But eventually I reached out for help that weekend when I was being fired. And the main thing, not only in conjunction with being fired, I got fired for not ever being at work. And I didn't call in sick one day. And all of a sudden, I'm at my friend's house coming back from the track. And I get a call from my mother, and my mother is crying. Oh, I'm so glad you're alive. Your boss called you up, called me up and said, you didn't call in sick this morning. He figured you were dead. And that was number one to get me to come into GA. I went to my first meeting in Gravesend in New York, September 9th, 1979. 40 guys, a lot of smoking, 3.5 hour meeting, and then they served the coffee at 11:30 and the cupcakes at 11:30 at night. That was the way GA was. And 20 minutes, everyone, 20 minutes of war stories. And this sort of gets to my whole point of what I'm going to talk about today is nobody talked about this, at least in those rooms, nobody talked about the steps. Even if you said the word higher power, you'd probably get gaveled because Jesus is coming next. And there was such a disconnect in those days between spirituality and religion. And I think it slowed down a lot of people's recovery. I made 9 months, didn't gamble, but literally went out of my way not to work the steps. But financially and everything else, my life got better. I moved to California. I made a couple of years. I was involved in the program. But again, no steps, no nothing, no higher power, and relapsed after 2 years and a month and went in and out of GA. Here's the one great thing. If I will give a little based on my own experience, for a year and a half, I was in and out of the program. Sometimes I'd come in with a month, sometimes 2 months, sometimes I'd come straight from the racetrack or a card club into a meeting. And nobody ever chided me. Nobody ever said, oh, you don't belong here. All I heard was courage and everything else. And, I've heard it said in GA, we'll love you until you're ready to love yourself. And they did that for me. These guys stuck with me no matter what. They fed me, they gave me minor jobs, whatever. But until the point where I became hopeless. And one night, it was a day where literally, my car was repossessed. When I went, I go down to my spot, I thought, I had every possession I owned to hock. And I thought my, because my car was going to, when I got down to my spot, my car was already repossessed. I went up to my apartment. There was a eviction notice on the door. It was one of those great days that maybe some people can relate to. And I went to a meeting that night. I shared. Not that I was going to kill myself, but I knew I was going to kill myself after the meeting. I was going to drive off a cliff in California. And I was just about to get into a car that somebody lent me. And a guy, his name was Red White, that's what he called himself, put his hand on my shoulder, flipped me around, and said, Mark, you never have to feel this way again. And that was the change of my life. Probably one of the biggest changes because. What I do, I started crying. Here's another thing about history about GA. In those days, nobody talked about feelings. We had this guy, I don't know if he was ever on here while he was still alive, Phil K, who was around in the early 80s. We used to call him Feelings Phil, because that's how rare people ever talked about their feelings. And I didn't want to feel that way again. Started crying, cried maybe 20 minutes, and I said, okay, what do I do? He says, go home, get on your hands and knees, which I did. I was spiritually and religiously bankrupt. I grew up, with very negative experiences in Judaism. I just went to the wrong temple, I guess. And card wise, once in a poker game, and I'm looking up and saying, "God, please give me a seven." I'm looking across the table, guys going, "God, please give me a club." So even the gambling gods, I had no God in my life at all. But yet I went home and prayed, and it sort of changed. That moment changed my life. I did not quit gambling right away. I'm pretty famous for starting a program called Controlled Gamblers Anonymous. We met at the racetrack every Thursday night, and which was pretty sick, until we had our whole treasury on the New York Jets in 1982, and when they lost, I went on my last binge, and came back to GA for good. I changed my sponsors. My main sponsor, who comes here, who has been a speaker many times here, Bill B. from Florida, is it's been my sponsor the whole 43 years. Oh, now that you're shaking your head, congratulations, George. Congratulations, Darlene. I get a little selfish sometimes, and I see you both out there. Congratulations. And I decided to work the steps, it's really weird. I had trouble with step one, almost in a way of not understanding the connection between step one and step two. I knew I was powerless over gambling. And I always say that, I figured if every time I relapsed, I had to come back to GA. And if I got to come back to GA anyway, might as well not gamble. Was probably what got me through that first year. Every time, if I thought I could gamble and not have to come back to GA, I would tell you, my computer's not working right now, and you'd never see me again. But I know that. I know. And I was in a early on, I was at a conference in New York, and it was on the steps, and somebody said, what steps have higher power in it in GA? And somebody said step one. And that was one of my biggest epiphanies in GA. Was that powerlessness, was not being able to quit on my own, being beyond. Once heard another member say he was beyond human help, and I was beyond human help. And when I look back at the step, I didn't come in because I didn't come into GA because I was powerless. I came into GA because my life was unmanageable. If my life was manageable, screw the powerlessness. If I could have managed my gambling, but I was going to kill myself, so I guess I couldn't manage it. And, once I learned about that powerlessness in step one as a lack of higher power, it got me to really under work on step two. And step two, I was very lucky. I had a very good mentor. I don't think Bill was working the steps then, and now Bill is probably one of the greatest people to help people through the steps. And somebody told me is to figure out, what my higher power is. And like, again, I was anti-religious in those days, didn't really just grasping spirituality. So I picked an ashtray. That was my first higher power. Because I once heard somebody mention a room, they used an ashtray or a doorknob. So I went for the ashtray instead of the doorknob. And it was my higher power. And as here's for me the beauty of working step two, I kept adding attributes to that ashtray. That ashtray is unconditional love, unconditional forgiveness, non-judgmental, omnipotent, available 24/7. My favorite one is a sense of humor. I could tell you stories all day. When I make plans, God laughs and whatnot. And it really helped me get through that step and realize, and that's the beauty of GA. I saw other people restored. I like the word, you know what? I'll break a rule. I don't care. I like the way the step reads in other programs. Restore them to sanity. I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what normal means. I have not met a normal, because especially I work in the field. I go to GA meetings. Most of my friends are from GA or ex-drug addicts or other people or alcoholics. I don't think I've ever met anybody normal yet. But so, I saw other people who I would hear their story and I'm a young kid, who were did insane things and were probably the most people I respected more than anyone in the world. So I had that hope. I went from my second higher power was a Godzilla statue, big giant, like 6 foot Godzilla. I bought it in Tijuana one trip. And I didn't realize until 10 years later it was Godzilla. I never saw that, which I always think is pretty funny. And then, my best higher power, I always say, for a while, was gravity. If I had an urge to gamble, I would just drop something. And as long as I felt, I had that, and keeping those attributes that I added, kept adding to what I needed out of the higher power was, that gravity worked because I could see it. It was perfect. I always say, and Dave's probably heard me say this 100 times, if I let this thing go and it would have been floating in the air, I would have said, my computer's not working right now, and you'd never see me again. That thing always falls. And it really helped. And then, I had another guy from AA. Because at those days, Bill wasn't taking me. I'm not sure if Bill was even working the steps then. And I had a guy from AA help me through the steps and certainly step three in learning how to make a decision. That's the next epiphany. Like I could ask my higher power any question, I'm going to get the right answer. I'll always know what to do, always know what to do. Do I choose it? You know what? After 43 years, I'm probably 92% in going. And that other 8%, when I decide to do it my own way, or go against what I think God would want me to do, it usually God ends up laughing because I screw things up. So I try my best. I'm not sure what's happening right now. Okay. I do my best to follow that decision. Realize I'm not the center of the universe and trust. Somebody once told me, which maybe some of you it'll change you a little. The easiest way to understand the higher power for me is I'm in a supermarket, have a full cart of groceries, go out to my car, unload my car, and what should I do? Should I leave my shopping cart in the parking spot or should I put it where it goes? Right? That's to me the easiest one, Of course, my higher power is going to tell me, put it back, and you get better, for me, I get better at it all the time. I always park my car next to where you have to put the shopping cart. So it's pretty easy to do it. I think in this program, we learn, the steps, I'll get through the rest of them. I always believe the steps are like a gym, and we keep working them. And if we work them for the rest of our life, if we like go to the gym regularly, we're going to end up, in really good shape for the rest of our lives. And that's what I've been doing. That's what to me these steps are, is to do my best, keep learning. There's a line I'm going to, like, again, you could throw me off the meeting, but there's a line from the AA program. I think it's on, and I'm not in AA. I don't have an alcohol problem, but I read the AA big book because I think it's really important part of my recovery, that and the 12 and 12. And there's a line on page 71 of the AA Big Book that says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves. And that's what I've been trying to do my whole life is fit myself. Again, going back to that gym analogy. So then I wanted to, in working the fourth step, I had somebody from AA. I worked my fourth and fifth step with somebody from AA. And it was really important. It was sort of a modification of using, I love that book, The GA Guide. It's really hard though, if you follow it exactly, and do it all everything it asks, that book that says GA Guide to the Fourth Step. Between that, but he gave me a whole list of about 30 pages to fill out. And I'll tell you, after I did my fifth step, it was such a relief. You can't imagine. I'm sure other people who've worked their fourth and fifth step of getting all that stuff out and realizing I wasn't that bad. I had a very smart guy who took me through it, who really made me work more on the asset part. One of my assets, What do I have to work with? Because I'm always going to have a defect. I always believe every asset has a defect. Especially you take honesty and lying. I was a pretty heavy liar when I gambled. It doesn't mean I'm not a liar because I'm pretty honest. I like throwing out numbers. I think I'm about 98.6% honest by commission, and about 82% by omission, which is to me like a pretty high number of honesty. And it really helped me get through it. I've really, I always believe, when I have my sponsees work the work that steps of their assets and their defects, I say, zero would be you're always lying. Honest, 10 would mean you've never told a lie. And the whole point is to move to this direction, is to keep getting better and better. I'll never be a 10, but I'm happy where I'm at right now of managing my defects, of realizing, he had me do not just my bad decisions, my good decisions, and figure out what worked for me in my life. Certainly resentments was another really big part. And I think the greatest resentment was with myself, of working on that. And then to me, step six is the most interesting of all the steps for me working. When I first read the step, we're entirely ready to have all these defects removed, of character removed. And for me, I knew what my defects were. And here's the weird part is I didn't, because I didn't know about AA then. And I thought I had to remove all my defects of character. And I'm at a step meeting. I had about 7 years clean, and it was run by this guy who started the very first step meeting in GA, Joey A. He did along with Bruce W. I don't know if anybody knows who those two people are from Brooklyn Meeting, but they started the first step meeting. And Joey A. took me aside and said, "It's having God help you remove all those defects, just like with the gambling part." And it made me really understand to, again, that's when I think I really started getting into understanding the steps the way they were originally written, which step six is entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Made more sense to me. Ready. There's also, I do a lot of workshops on the steps. That word ready just means also, hey, if I did my first five steps fairly correctly, I'm ready to move on. Then certainly step seven, I've learned you don't ask, you don't get what you don't ask for. And understanding, after a fourth and fifth step, understanding that word for me, humbly, of what humbly means. I could have never understood what humility was unless I worked the first six steps and was able to connect, In the old days, I would have always thought, I would have been the guy, if they would have said, there would have been a booth giving out free stuff. All you do is just have to ask. I would have stood outside of the booth looking for as much self-pity for somebody to ask me to come. Now I've learned how to ask for what I think I deserve, based on how I live. And then here we come to step eight, for me. I'm so glad I waited, because I had not forgiven myself. Had I done it any earlier than the first seven steps, I would have not been able to forgive myself. So I don't care how many people would have said, "Oh, Mark, yeah, you paid me back that money," or "Mark, you apologized to me, I forgive you." It would have meant nonsense to me. I would have, in my own head, said, "Well, yeah, if they really knew me, they would never forgive me. This is all just bull crap." So I've learned in terms of that, of making my list, which was quite long. There's one guy I still owe money to from after 43 years. He grew up in the same building. I always look for him. I still haven't been able to find him, but every other person, I've paid back all the money I've owed, and made all the certainly made the apologies of, friends that I lost. I got almost every friend back and everything else, by doing the right thing. It's the only way I always believe, it's I you know what, I don't mind doing it. Part of the third step prayer for me says, take away my difficulties so victory over them will bear witness to those I would help. I had to learn how to walk the walk. If I'm going to help anybody else, walk the walk. Making amends, step nine. I'm sort of talking about both steps. Just to give you an example of that, except when it would injure others in the ninth step, it came up with me on when I was younger, and I'd be, my parents would go on vacation. I would steal all the money in the house. I knew where every penny was hidden, steal all the money, always afraid when they'd come back that that would be it. Nothing ever happened when they came back, even though all the money was gone. And my parents came out for my 10th anniversary, and my mom and dad sat in this big meeting in Downey, which was a great, great meeting. And in the car on the way home, my dad says to me, "Well, I heard all those stories. At least you never stole from us." My mom never told my dad, that I had stolen money. And if I would have said it right then and there, it would have caused the biggest fight ever. So, I don't know if, I just added that in, where sometimes how that one little, I always call that the GA escape clause, but it's not that much of an escape clause. Certainly step 10 of taking inventory, I do quite often, and I always believe for me that it was perfect that it was step 10, of really taking personal. I don't think I could have taken it. I don't know if anybody else could relate with. I never thought I was doing enough. Never thought I was doing enough on GA. And I'd call my sponsor, and my sponsor says, "You're doing enough. You're doing enough." And, it happens with me with so many people I sponsor. I'm not working in the program hard enough. Yeah, you're working the program. Great. But getting through those first nine steps allowed me a much better perspective of myself to say, hey, this is working. This isn't working. Maybe I'm going to too many meetings now. Maybe I'm not going to enough meetings. I'm not making enough phone calls. I need to connect. I need to add a couple of prayers to my day, whatever that is. And the second part is for me is always, promptly admitting what a can do need personal inventory. And when I was wrong, promptly admitted it is, always to be in the solution. That's what that part of the step means. I hate complaining. If I'm working with my sponsees, they start complaining. I just say, give me three things you're grateful for, and then let's start thinking about the solution. What are we going to do? And almost everything goes back. I don't want to forget, goes back to the third step and higher power and making decisions based on running it by something that I think is the greatest possible thing ever imaginable. Step 11, I used to do prayers on prayer. I used to do workshops on prayer at conferences. And one guy says to me, and I pray every day, and one guy says to me, Mark, prayer, he was in this work in the workshop. He says, prayer is like calling somebody up on the phone and talking and talking and talking. And then before they have a chance to talk, you hang up on them. He taught me what meditation is about listening to, by being able to ask good questions to my higher power and then meditating on the answers. And I also love meditation. I think it's so important. In the mid 80s, at a conference in San Diego, like in those days, those guys, the trustees, I was a trustee, I was young, probably like 30 years old, and they scared the crap out of me, the trustees. They were all tough guys, the toughest guy. It's like I always thought you had to fight, and whoever won, they didn't have elections, they had boxing matches. And this guy, Larry G from Canada, did the first guided meditation. It broke me down. It broke every person down in that room. Like grown men were crying that, like, I thought were gonna beat the shit out of me if I voted against him. And I watched the power of meditation, the power of understanding, the power of what's in here, of me being able to get it out, or for me to be able to get the answers. So I'm a big fan of prayer and meditation, and get better and better. Maybe this is a good time. In step 11, about 17, 18 years ago, a rabbi called me up out of the blue, and I became sort of semi-religious Jew again, you know? So who knows? My conscious contact with God is way stronger. It gets stronger every day, literally. And then certainly, I know we're probably running out of time. I got a few minutes, but I'll go. I'm almost done. I think I'm up to 12. I always believe you can't give what you don't have. You can't give what you don't have. And, does that mean I couldn't help somebody with a computer problem on my first day on GA? I could help somebody with a computer. Could I help them with recovery my first day? Not a chance. I always believe it's really important for those people, taking people through the steps, which I love doing. And I do it clinically also. I'm it's all about giving back, this program. That's what I try and tell people. That's why I still, if some days, I've been going to meetings regularly for literally 47 years, 43 years clean, is, one of the best reasons is I get to give back. I have a great life because I don't gamble. So if that's the only reason why I still come to GA meetings, then I'll take that of being able to help others. And just to finish, I don't know, some people probably know, I ended up getting into the field about 30 years ago, and I clinically work with problem gamblers and with training therapists. And one of my favorite trainings, I've done it now in about 20 states, is teaching therapists, about teaching therapists on what the steps mean, so they could talk to their clients and not go against the steps, or at least understand, hey, what step are you working or whatnot. I think the steps are, that's the program. I can do another hour on the Unity program, which I think is what makes GA GA. People with, when I ask a lot of people, which is the spiritual part of the program? I see you're about to clap your hands, Dan. I'm just about there. And I'll finish on this. And I'm very grateful you guys gave me an opportunity to, and when I say guys, I'm from New York, it means men and women, gave me the opportunity. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, yeah, forgot what I was going to say. So I'm pretty much done. Again, very grateful to be here. I'm hoping, if anybody, I know there are people who do writing the steps, workshops, all kinds of stuff. If you haven't worked the steps, find somebody to help you take you through the steps. I wish every fourth grader in the world did the 12 steps. We'd have a perfect world. It's a great, it's made my GA experience fantastic and my life fantastic. And with that, with God's help, GA's help, pretty much your help, pretty sure I'm not going to gamble today. And with that, I'll pass.
There it is. Wow. Mark, you could have continued talking. I mean, this is an amazing, amazing topic, and you have such experience. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
You're
you for
welcome.
coming back again for your fourth visit here. And I believe this out of the four is the best one. And
Thank
it's been
you.
about 4 years since you've been here. So it's been a while. I'm so glad you're back with us, Mark. And I know you were so had so much to do at the beginning of these meetings as well. So thank you for that.
Just to say one quick thing, it was a God shot because you had called the wrong mark
I
about
know.
a month ago and said, "Hey, am I speaking?" And then I said, "Okay, so it is what it is."
Is what it is. You're right, and it's just meant to be. Higher power has other plans. We make our plans, and he decides or she decides which is going to work and what isn't. So, thank you so much for that. We have a few hands up already with some questions and comments, and just everybody realize that it's still being recorded, and but only the audio portion. If you came in later, there's no pictures and there's no There's no visual at all. It's only audio. But if you'd like to ask a question, like I have one already in the chat, and you don't want your voice recorded, please just send it to myself or to one of the co-hosts who will ask it for you. And before we even go to Luca, George, Joseph M, and then Lynn, the question is from the question came in a lot earlier from the chat. And it's basically this, Mark. How can I get unstuck on a step, especially step four?
You know, that's the. I'll tell you what my original person who took me would have said. You didn't work step three. You know, is rework step three, and step three. If I'm listening to my higher power goes, go do it. Go write your step. It is a tough step, and you know, sometimes I'll suggest, you know, pick a night a week or a couple of nights a week. Pick a time. You know, maybe it's an hour or whatever. And no matter what, even if I'm not writing, I'm going to sit for an hour with my notebook in front of me. You know, eventually you'll start writing. I always try and get people who are to journal, you know, just write one line every night, and they end up writing a page. You know, is to just get started. But I really believe go back to step three if you're struggling with step four and you really haven't worked step three.
That's a great answer. Thank you. Thank you for that one. And now we start off. So Luca, you're first. Luca V, thank you for being with us. And what question or comment would you have for Mark today?
Yeah, thank you for a great speaking, Mark. I'm Luca, a compulsive gambler. I am
Hi,
also
Luca.
26, and I've also gambled since I was a kid, so I could relate to your story a lot. I'm quite a newcomer to the GA program, and I wondered, it's two things I would like to ask of your experience. In one term, you mentioned feelings, and I've noticed in GA, it's sometimes quite complicated. Also, in some literature, it could say that almost all the feelings could quickly become self-pity, self-loathing. And I've noticed that some members tend to talk a lot about feelings and others tend to not really disregard them as self-loathing, but would quickly say it's self-pity. Just stop with this. And that's one think I'd like your view on, and the other is on probably on sponsorship, like how you view this as a is this to you, does it mean like your sponsor gives you something you work with and you take it literally, because there's so much suggestions in the GA space that one can pick from different literature people, and it's I just wanted your take on that.
Okay, two really good questions. One thing I've learned is in the 12-step program, self-pity doesn't work, you know, because we're all busting our ass trying to get better. And so I've always tried as hard as I can to, you know, and especially lately, I've been learning a lot about positive talk, about not letting, because once I, if I start getting a negative feeling, I don't know if you know, the word ruminate, like where the cow keeps chewing its cud over and over again, it just gets worse and worse. You know, if, and it almost ties in, you know, the minute I start complaining, and if I call my sponsor, which I do, the minute I start complaining, he says, write something you're grateful for. I think that some way getting out of self-pity is to do a gratitude list. Sometimes really helps of, hey, what do I have? Because it's not going to work in a, it, I've learned it doesn't work in a meeting. And I always try and do positive self-talk and change that feeling, but be aware of the feeling. You know, I think also a good way to understand how your feelings work, because like in the very beginning of GA, I started feeling good listening to, I'd be driving home from a meeting, listening to music, and I'm feeling really good. And I turned the news on because I didn't want to feel that good, you know, and I had to learn how to live up to those feelings. You know, the bottom line is like now it's easy for me to say, hey, I'm not gambling. You know, there's no reason for me to feel bad, you know, and, you know, going back to the steps. Is it's so important from day one to start working on self-love and self-forgiveness. That takes away a lot of that self-pity by forgiving myself. I mean, I have a disease, That's why I look at it. I understand gambling addiction as a disease, and why punish myself for a disease? I had plenty of consequences, plenty of external consequences of paying people back, of trying to figure out how I'm going to pay my rent in the beginning of GA. It's easy to find money when you're gambling. It's not as easy to find money when you're not gambling. And for me to, sort of work and then journal about my feelings at the end. Today I had this feeling. I had to reteach myself what feelings are. And I know I'm long answer, but in terms of sponsorship, is I listen to whatever my sponsor tells me to do. He's a hard ass. And although he's mellowed out a lot over the last 20 years, I found somebody I trust. He hasn't stared me wrong yet. And what I've learned with people who I sponsor and whatever, I do my best. But if your sponsor ain't working for you, then find another sponsor. I guarantee you, your old sponsor won't mind that you drop them. They're probably not a good sponsor anyway if you're not getting what you want from them. But find somebody. I think it's one of the most important relationships. It's a shame. Like, I didn't go through the steps with my sponsor, but I found somebody else too. And now my sponsor is probably one of the best people to go to do the steps. So find somebody that you trust and listen, or at least here's the last thing I'll say about that. I tell my sponsees, first thing I tell them is, if you're afraid to tell me, don't do it. I promise you, I won't talk you out of it. If you said, I'm going to the racetrack or the casino right now, I won't try and talk you out of it. But if you're afraid to tell me that, then don't do it. And I think that's a really good way that I work as a sponsor. Thanks, Luca. And stick around. Stick around. This is the people I know who keep sticking around have great lives.
That's so beautiful. Great questions and a great answer, Mark. And you're absolutely right. I have to chime in a little bit myself. My recovery started the second I found my sponsor and I was able to see and take direction finally. So awesome. And by the way, really quickly as well, that thing about call me and I won't stop you. I tried that with one of my sponsees and it didn't work. They went right out and gambled. So
I
sometimes
don't
it works,
care.
sometimes it doesn't. But anyway, thank you for both of you. And George B, with a 4-year anniversary today. 4 years today. Congratulations, George. And you have a question or comment? Welcome.
Hello, everybody. My name is George, and I'm a compulsive gambler.
Hey, George.
First of all, thank you so much, Brother Mark, for such a beautiful share, for such a beautiful speech. I related a lot. And also thank you, Brother Dan, Sister Claire, Brother Tony, Brother Frank, for your service. And yeah, it's an amazing meeting. Thank you, everybody. And Brother Mark, so I wrote down on paper to what I related to. I related when you mentioned about being fired from work. So I had no responsibility at all what came to my work. But I always felt my ego was so huge. I always felt that they will not fire me because I was so good at my job. This is what I thought. And I would come sometimes 3 hours, 4 or 5 hours late to work. This is what I used to do. I was a hotel entertainer, a manipulator, I would say. And what you said, working the step 4 and 5 AA way. So I did it also in 2020 with my AA sponsor at that time. And when I worked the step 4 and 5 with my NA sponsor in 2024. And now most recently I worked the steps 4 and 5 with my current GA sponsor, Brother Steve C, who is here today, and he's celebrating his belly button birthday today. So yeah, we worked it in 2025 recently. And I'm very thankful for him because he's an amazing sponsor and he's an amazing friend as well. So yeah. And I wanted to ask you probably mentioned it, but it might have just skipped my ears. So how do you practice the step 10 daily?
Earlier on, I'm Jewish, and there's a prayer I say at night before retiring to sleep, and it's a prayer of forgiveness, that I pray to God that God forgives me for anything I've done, and I forgive anything anybody else has done, and that they forgive me for what I was done. And I, most of my problems are taking inventory with other people, and I try really hard not to have to mention people's names when I'm saying that prayer at night. It's sort of like putting my parking next to the shopping cart. I try not to do things bad so that when I do that, say that prayer and take my inventory, it's really quick. But if not, I'll take my inventory and realize, hey, I was disrespectful to somebody today, or I didn't do the work that I planned on doing, or I didn't speak to somebody today. So I do it every night within that one prayer. And hopefully it's a quick one that I didn't do anything wrong. And during the day, when anything is going good, I say thank you, God, all the time. I just found that I had my annual lung CAT scan, and I just got the results was great. And the first thing I said, thank you, God, and
That's
whatnot.
beautiful. Thank you both. George, again, congratulations on your
And
40th
congratulations,
birthday.
Jeff.
Thank you for your answer, Brother Mark. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hold on. Before I'm gonna, I got to do a 10 step anyway right now because I know Walt is going to be the speaker or two after me. I forgot to call him and wish him a happy anniversary. So happy anniversary, Walt. That's my 10th step for the day. Okay.
That was beautiful, both of you. Thank you again, George B, and to Steve C for on his birthday, belly button birthday, getting you as the sponsee and both of you celebrating. What a beautiful gift for both of you. Awesome. Mark, yes, you're going to have a chance to speak with Walt after Lynn.
Yeah, I'm
But
in
before
trouble.
Lynn, even before Lynn, I'm sorry, Lynn, just please be a little bit patient. We have somebody in the waiting in the chat again. What is your advice for someone in recovery who stopped journaling and just cannot find the motivation to start again?
Just start journaling. Just do it. Write one line. Just make a commitment. I always say, I tell people the minimum is, write before you go. I'm a before you go to bed. Write the date, the time, the city you're in, and one sentence, and then it'll end up flowing. But just make a commitment to write two lines every night, where you are, and the date, and one feeling you had during the day or whatever. I have a lot of gaps in my journals, where maybe a year or two and I don't journal, and then all of a sudden I'll pick it up. And I love reading the old ones, they're just the best.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you to both. And we go right to Lynn now. Lynn, welcome. And I'm so glad I put the E after the two N's.
Yeah, thank you. Dan, thank you for the meeting. It's great to meet you, Mark. My name is Lynn, compulsive gambler. I'm from Nevada. Actually, it's so funny. I'm glad that you were the speaker today because I'm visiting Wickenburg,
Oh.
which is a stop, a skip to Prescott, and I found out that the correct way to say it is not Prescott, it's Prescott. And my husband is working here for a month, and so I'm just taking in Arizona and going on walks and just seeing the beautiful scenery. But I'm a compulsive relapser, and I'm really, really trying hard. Again this time, but I just wanted to ask you when your meetings are on Wednesdays.
We actually, and if I know you're coming, I'll go. I don't usually go. There's a meeting in Prescott at 5:30 every Wednesday. Excuse me, every Wednesday night at 5:30.
It's not a Zoom.
No. My home Zoom meeting is 7:30 at night, Arizona time on Wednesday nights. But no, there's a good physical meeting in Prescott on Wednesday nights at 5:30 physical.
Right. Okay. Well, anyway, I just really appreciated hearing everything, and thank you for letting me speak.
And hang in there. You only have to not gamble for today. And
That
each day you wake up in the morning, and say, hey, if you believe in God or whatever higher power, just relieve the obsession for me to gamble today, or read the day at a time. If you do one thing in the morning, you're 82.9% less likely to relapse that day.
True. In Arizona, there's not too much gambling, so I'm safe here for a month.
Good.
Thank you very much, Mark.
You got it.
Thank you both. And Lynn, if you ever need a meeting, this meeting continues every single day and it has for over 6 years. Thank you for being here with us. Oh boy. Walt D, my good friend.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Walt D, compulsive gambler. So good to hear my friend Mark. And what a great talk, Mark. Really got a lot out of that. I was so lucky I had Ray M to give me my work me through my steps the first time. And he did a tremendous job of changing me around. The question I have for you, Mark, is what all do you remember from those trips that we used to take to San Diego with Glenn H. and Vince and you and myself? We had a lot of fun.
I don't, I moved to California. I'm here, and maybe this explains what all GA is. I'm living here th maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and I was living up in LA, and there was a picnic with a softball game. And we're talking about 46 years ago. Walt struck me out like four times in that game, 46 years ago. And they did not make me feel bad. And I'll never forget the way they made, we talk about feelings of still strike it out and not feeling bad. I don't know if anybody else could ever relate what I just said. It's what made me really love GA and hate Walt. I just can't stand Walt. He struck me out many times over many years. No, I'm joking. Those times early on, and Walt knows, even when I was relapsing, whatever, I was always involved, went to every picnic, helped set up picnics. And those rides, I was so lucky, of being in the car with old timers from GA. Me, Walt, and the guy who had the most time, Al N, and Ray M, who's got over 50 years. We used to drive to the Board of Regents, Walt, and those moments for me of hanging out with Vince or the or Lynn or other old timers. Whenever there's a young guy comes into the program, I say, adopt, not me, but adopt an old timer, adopt an old timer. And those rides and those times driving down to the San Diego picnic were just the best. Being in a car with a three or four GA people, I don't think there's anything better than that. Does that answer your question, Walt?
Yes, it does.
And
Good to
congratulations.
hear you're healthy again.
I am. And certainly congratulations on your milestone.
Wow. Thank you both. Congratulations between both of you, almost 100 years. So thank you so much for both of you. And here we have Frank S on a bike. Welcome, Frank. And then we'll get to Joseph M.
All right, give me a second. Hi, everybody. It's Frank. Yes, I went off, got off the bike. And I had poor connection a little bit earlier, but I'm so glad to be here. And I'm in Hawaii, and I am blessed and recovering compulsive gambler. My last bet was January 22nd, 2011. My first meeting back was January 22nd, 2011. And it was right by the same ocean, about 3,000 miles away. It was at Dana Point. Mark was there at that meeting. And that's when my journey began. And Mark, so glad to hear you once again. I always pick up something new and different. I love the memories, of course, of Feelings Phil and Phil K. And but also the discussion about Red White, who was a one of the most amazing guys. I didn't know him well, but I knew of him. And I knew that he was in and out of GA all the time, and the most solid guy in history, probably in AA. He had over 30 years, and it took him years and years. before he finally made 1 year, I think. You'll correct me if I'm wrong. And it just tells you, speaks to how powerful this disease is. And someone in that kind of recovery in a solid program has this disease and struggles with it. And but I've always tried to find a sponsor that had that AA background. So because I think we're getting better at it, but over time I think we're deficient in working these steps. Mark, I just want to say thank you for your service. Thank you for your friendship. And you know that I'm never going to be at this meeting when you're sharing and I have an opportunity to speak, to not always mention the thing you always used to say to me. And it's this, because I was the constant relapser. I was the guy that would get all these keychains 30, 60, 90 days. And after a while, in a group would say, hey, Frank, we're running short. Can you give some of those back? And until I finally started getting it. And you always said, every time I come back in the most loving way, he says, come on, Frank. You know you're going to be coming back. Just stay. So I'm going to pass it on to all of you here. I want to congratulate George on your 4 years. Oh my goodness. Thanks for celebrating with us. I know you have the freedom today that I talk about. I mean, look at me. Here I am enjoying life, not a care in the world. You know, just it took a little bit of willingness and a lot of love from so many people in this program. It's funny, I was sharing with someone today. I think that person is on the meeting today. This idea is that I screwed up so much in my life and I still have this beautiful life today. I'm just wondering if I'd screwed up even more, how much better my life would be. So maybe with that, Mark, I'm going to ask you, are there times back in your life when you've done some horrendous things, but it wouldn't put you at this place where you're at today had you not done that? And thanks again, my friend. Love you. So good to see you here and hear you once again.
Love you too, Frank. And I've known Frank pretty much almost since the beginning, also. And, starting this meeting really changed the course of GA. Really, I can't tell you how grateful I am for you. You know, most of my, I made some really stupid decisions in terms of work that all worked out in my life. I've been very lucky. You know, I went in. I left the computer business to go into the baseball card business in the 80s when everybody told me I'm nuts. And then I struggled for a year and then ended up doing very well in business, going back to school, or I did so much work in what I do outside of GA in working with gamblers and their families. But for years, I hardly made any money. But I knew it was the right thing to do. And everybody tried to talk me out of it. I used to teach addiction studies at Pierce College, living in San Clemente, 3.5 hour drive to hardly make any money. But I wanted to be able to learn how to teach. Mistakes in relationships, certainly that, but I'm still alive. And it's the thread of GA. That's the easiest way I could say it. I've been going to meetings for straight, hardly ever miss a week without going to a meeting. And it's got me through five stents in my arteries, herniated disc, sciatica. All kinds of health issues, financial issues. What I almost lost my house because of gambling. But I was never afraid to, this is with 30 years, because when I got sick, I wasn't working. And it was talking about it in GA. And all of a sudden, some guy who says, yeah, I have a mortgage. I think I could help you. If I didn't talk about that in GA, I would have lost my house. I would have lost everything. Help me figure out how to keep my house. It's that constant thing. There's so much stuff, getting fired from a company falsely, all kinds of stuff. It was the threat of GA that can brought me through everything, of being open about it, talking to my sponsor, or even sharing about it in a meeting. You know, I was once in a meeting at about 7 years clean. I'm in Brooklyn, and I because I was back in Brooklyn, I had like some urges. I shared it in a meeting and I got blasted in comments. You got 7 years, you got to set an example. To me, setting an example is to be honest with my feeling, good or bad, in a meeting, or what's going on with me, good or bad. Because you're the, I think it's Bob G who always says, you're my board of directors. You're the people that are gonna that know me, that have been able to pull me out. Here, I know I'm talking a lot, and because it's just making me think, this is a weird thing. The minute I meet another gambler, I feel like I know them forever. It's this weird thing. I don't know if anybody else experiencing that. Go to a meeting, new member comes in, I'm their best friend in 5 minutes. We have this GA psychic connection, and it's the men and women in this program, and I've met the best over the years, have helped me through all those missteps, whether it was caused by me or just had nothing to do with me. Thanks, Frank.
Sorry about that. I can't find the unmute button myself here for some reason. Thank you both. That was so beautiful. And we have Joseph M, aka Smokey Joe, next. And you're up next, probably last too.
Yeah, I was right there. I got in the back of the bus. It's all right. Well, yeah, Joseph M or Smokey Joe, known as the Street. I've known Mark for 41 years, people. Here's a couple questions. Your brother Walt said he never wanted to be a trustee. He was on a board of regents a few times. My first question is, when somebody comes to rehab, what is a vocal point? Denise, write this down. She's I taught her a lot, man. She's got over 5 years going on, 61 months. Here's the key. What's a vocal point that they learned so much? Which the percentage is pretty high for them not to go back. And my second question is, I just read something. In psychology, a person over 65 years old, in psychology, it said nothing about recovery. Why does somebody that's been a friend for years tries to disappear and not be with them?
I'll answer the second question first. First of all, and this is probably, I don't care, outside issue, but there's the greatest article in, we're talking about seniors and gambling. Greatest, if anybody's a senior, gets the AARP magazine for this month. It's all about problem gambling, this month's AARP magazine. Older people like myself, grew up in a different generation where I'm very grateful. I have no problem asking for help. But when working with a lot of seniors, they don't seem to want help. I don't know if it's a generational thing or not. And they'd sooner disappear than ask for help or sooner suffer. Thank God I'm 70 years old, grew up, spent my whole adult life on GA, got no problem asking for help. Still to this day. About the other thing, and I'm hoping it's not complicated by being an outside issue. When the people who come into treatment, I think it's really important to do two things for them. It's that question that I once put on the trustee agenda to remove the paragraph that says, is knowing why we gambled important? Because I think it's an opinion. And now I was going to sort of say it before. In the beginning, it drove me nuts. Like when people would share, oh, my therapist told me this, I was old school in those days and it should have been your sponsor telling you. But I think that for different people, knowing why, for myself, I needed to know why. I saw when I first got clean, I saw a psychiatrist that specialized in problem gambling, and I was probably the luckiest person in the world to get that professional help. But I think the things in the beginning that we do is that I do, and it's the same thing as being a sponsor, so I don't feel like it's an outside issue, is A, stabilize the money, and B, start self-love and self-forgiveness. I think those are the two most important things that when I'm working with a sponsee or a client is stabilize the money and at least, at least come up with a plan and start day one being able to love and forgive yourself.
Beautiful.
And yeah, it was just as I know, I'll never forget Joe. At my first trustees meeting, or one of my trustees meeting, Joe's there. It was the first time he was a trustee. And I'll never forget, he was the loudest voice at the Serenity Prayer, and that's how I'll never forget Joe from the minute I met him, is that Serenity, that first Serenity Prayer with about 50 people.